Scripture reading this morning is from Leviticus 26, verses 3 through 6. If you walk in my statutes and observe my commandments and do them, then I will give you your rains in their season, and the land shall yield its increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. Your threshing shall last to the time of the grape harvest, and the grape harvest shall last to the time for sowing. And you shall eat your bread to the full, and dwell in your land securely. I will give peace in the land, and you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid, and I will remove harmful beasts from the land, and the sword shall not go through your land.
The first successful climb, at least that we know of, to the summit of Mount Everest was accomplished in May of 1953. Two climbers, one of them from New Zealand, the other a local from right there in the Himalayas, they set their feet on the Earth's highest point above sea level, 29,029 feet. And in the years that followed that, several more successful ascents were made to the top of Mount Everest by tenacious individuals and groups from all over the world. But through all of those, through all of the various groups and individuals that made it to the top, the unsung heroes of all of those expeditions were the men like the guy who went up on that first journey, the Sherpas, the local Himalayan peoples, who are mountaineers of really a caliber unmatched anywhere else in the rest of the world. They served as guides up dangerous glaciers and through wind-whipped narrow mountain passes. And really, they're pretty fascinating guys. I mean, their skills have become the stuff of legend. One Sherpa man holds the record for being the youngest ever to get to the top of Mount Everest. He was 16 years old when he climbed the world's tallest mountain. Another holds the record for the most number of times to visit the summit of the mountain. He's been there 21 times. And yet another one holds the record for the fastest climb to the top, doing it in just 8 hours. It's insane what these guys are capable of. They are powerful climbers. They know the mountains well. And their help to foreigners has been invaluable over the years. Because, and here's where we're going with this, it's all well and good to want to do something great. But it'd be foolish to tackle something like that without seeking the help of somebody who can really get you there. And that's what the story that we're going to look at this morning reminds us of. It reminds us of that same lesson when it comes to our walk through the Christian life. Because it's all well and good to want to do something great in the kingdom of God. But it's foolish to try to tackle that without seeking the help of the one who can actually get you there. And that's one of the main lessons that we learn from the story of King Asa. That's why we're this morning, we're in 2 Chronicles chapter 14. And as I say, we're going to do a good bit of reading there together. And because I think this is probably a fairly unfamiliar story to most of us, I want to do a good deal of reading and look at what the text tells us about King Asa and about a handful of things that he did as he sought the help of God. And so the first thing, and we're going to start reading in verse 1 for this, is we're going to see that King Asa builds his nation by seeking God's honor. So let's begin reading 2 Chronicles 14. Let's read the first 7 verses together. Abijah slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the city of David, and Asa, his son, reigned in his place. In his days the land had rest for 10 years. And Asa did what was good and right in the sight of the Lord his God. He took away the foreign altars and the high places and broke down the pillars and cut down the Asherim and commanded Judah to seek Yahweh, the God of their fathers, and to keep the law and the commandment. He also took out of all the cities of Judah the high places and the incense altars, and the kingdom had rest under him. He built fortified cities in Judah, for the land had rest. He had no war in those years, for the Lord gave him peace. And he said to Judah, "Let us build these cities and surround them with walls and towers, gates and bars. The land is still ours, because we have sought the Lord our God. We have sought him, and he has given us peace on every side." So they built and prospered. And then go to chapter 15, look at verse 1 there. Then the Spirit of the Lord, the Spirit of God, came upon Azariah, the son of Obed, and he went out to meet Asa and said to him, "Hear me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. The Lord is with you while you are with him. If you seek him, he will be found by you. But if you forsake him, he will forsake you. For a long time, Israel was without the true God and without a teaching priest and without law. But when in their distress they turned to the Lord, the God of Israel, and sought him, he was found by them. In those times there was no peace to him who went out or to him who came in, for great disturbances afflicted all the inhabitants of the lands. They were broken in pieces. Nation was crushed by nation and city by city, for God troubled them with every sort of distress. But you, Asa, take courage. Do not let your hands be weak, for your work shall be rewarded. Now, I find this really interesting. I find this really fascinating. I love the story here that as Asa takes away the idols from the cities of his people, and as he builds up their national defenses, he does it all because this is God's nation. And this is God's honor that matters in what he's doing here. And I love the details as well that he makes personal sacrifices in order to honor his God. We didn't read this, but if you scan down to the end of chapter 15, it talks about how he had to depose his own mother from her throne. He took her off the throne as queen mother because she was worshiping idols. I'm just imagining that that didn't go over very well, right? But it's a sacrifice that he was willing to make. Because what the man is doing is trying to give honor to his God who deserves that honor. And so from this, and this is what I want to do this morning, I want to highlight the story. I want to tell you what the man does. And from each element of his story, I want us to learn one lesson. And so this one, as obvious as it may seem, I think is very important. It is that when we put God first, he keeps his promises to bless us. Now, Thomas read just from a minute ago from Leviticus chapter 26, and I want to revisit that passage more thoroughly in a little while. But it's one of those passages where God says, if you seek me, good things will happen. And if you forsake me, bad things will happen. And that's kind of the way that the old law worked, right? I mean, that was the choice that he gave them again and again and again. And the reality is that while the blessings may not always look the same as they did for them, the promise still stands that for those who walk with God, he has promised blessings in abundance. And so he told the apostles that there will not be those who have given up things in this life that will not be rewarded in this life and in the life to come. And so the lesson for us is to remember to seek God himself, to seek him as Asa did. When God's honor was put first, the blessings came after. Now, if we switch that, it doesn't work, right? If we seek the blessings, we seek God because we want the blessings. No, that doesn't work. But when we truly just seek to give God the honor he is due, then the blessings, I sound like I'm about to sing the wise man, the blessings will come down, okay? Now, part of Asa's nation building, that's his first step here, the first thing we see in this, but part of Asa's nation building is the military power that God gives to the nation during this time as well. And so let's go back to the text. Let's take a look again. This time, let's start in chapter 14 and verse 8. And I want to show you there that King Asa wins battles by praying for God's power. All right, so after all of his religious reforms have started to take place, and after they have, at the end of verse 7, they have built and prospered. Now in verse 8, Asa had an army of 300,000 from Judah, armed with large shields and spears, and 280,000 men from Benjamin that carried shields and drew bows. All of these were mighty men of valor. Zerah, the Ethiopian, came out against them with an army of 1,000,000 men and 300 chariots, and he came as far as Maresha. And Asa went out to meet him, and they drew up their lines of battle in the valley of Zephatha. I'm not going to keep reading all these Hebrew names. And Asa cried to the Lord his God, and he said, O Lord, there is none like you to help between the mighty and the weak. Help us, O Lord our God, for we rely on you, and in your name we have come up against this multitude. O Lord, you are our God. Let not man prevail against you. And so the Lord defeated the Ethiopians before Asa and before Judah, and the Ethiopians fled. Asa and the people who were with him pursued them as far as Gerar, and the Ethiopians fell until none remained alive, for they were broken before the Lord and his army. The men of Judah carried away very much spoil, and they attacked all the cities around Gerar, for the fear of the Lord was upon them. They plundered all the cities, for there was much plunder in them, and they struck down the tents of those who had livestock and carried away sheep in abundance and camels. Then they returned to Jerusalem. I think it's really interesting, I think it's really fascinating, and I think it's really important to note the focus of what Asa prays when he is faced with an army of men that is round about twice the size of his own, and that has better equipment, and that has come specifically to wage war. When he's faced with that scenario, Asa prays to God, and he says, God, glorify yourself. Glorify your own name, because these people that have come to attack us, they have come against your people. And so do not let man prevail over you. Now, I think there's something really important about that, that what Asa is focused on as he tries to live his life and do something great before God is the glory of God himself. And so as Bible believers, it's really no surprise to us, although it would be a surprise to stand there and watch this happen, but it's really no surprise to us that against impossible odds, Asa calls on God, the God for whom all things are possible. And as a result, God comes to their rescue and he saves them. Now, the lesson for us here is pretty simple, but it's a good reminder that prayer is our way of seeking God's power to conquer things that are otherwise going to be impossible for us. That's a pretty easy lesson to take away from this story, but a powerful one nonetheless. Thankfully, I think our struggles are going to be, most of the time in our lives, much smaller than Asa's. I don't imagine that we will find ourselves standing face to face in a valley with an army of 1,000,000 men and 300 chariots. But even though our struggles are smaller, we still kind of have a tendency, don't we, to worry about them like they're just as impossible. And yet, we have the same power available to us that Asa did. And so, can I just say to you, just encourage you a little bit, that when you find yourself worrying about getting the bills paid, pray about that. Right? When you find yourself worried about recovering from a failure at work, pray about that. When you find yourself worried that the church might be in trouble because of the way the culture's going, I don't know if we can survive in this kind of environment anymore, pray about that. When you find yourself wondering if your marriage and your family are going to turn out like they should, pray about that. When you find yourself worried that your temptations, which only seem to get stronger, will eventually overtake you, pray about that. And when you find yourself worried because you're just not sure if you're ever going to find a sense of purpose in this life, pray about that. Because with God, all things are possible, even the things that to us seem utterly impossible. And remember what our goal is in living this life. It's the same as Asa's prayer there in chapter 14 and verse 11. Take a look again, 2 Chronicles 14, verse 11, where Asa essentially says, Lord, let us live and let us glorify you. That, brothers and sisters, is our goal, to give glory to God. And Asa does that by seeking God's power to win this battle. And more than that, more than winning battles, he does that through what I think is the most glory-targeted act that there is, which is Asa guides his people to worship God. And he guides his people by worshiping God alone. The reason that I wanted to highlight Asa is, number one, because I think a lot of us don't know his story very well. But number two, because Asa is really, he stands out in a big way among the other kings, right? There are not that many of them. We could count them on one or two hands. There's not that many of them about whom the text says he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. Again and again and again, we read about these men that did evil in the sight of the Lord. And even those that did right We read about their catastrophic failings again and again. And yet here, we find the story that Asa was devoted to God from his heart, and he worships God alone. And so, again, the first handful of verses of chapter 14, where we read about him tearing down idols and building up fortified cities and removing all of the idolatry from the nation, Asa is determined to worship God alone. And then chapter 15, after he has heard, let's read these words together, after he has heard the prophecy that he will be rewarded for his work, take a look at chapter 15 and verse 8. As soon as Asa heard these words, the prophecy of Azariah the son of Oded, he took courage and he put away the detestable idols from all the land of Judah and Benjamin and from the cities that he had taken in all the hill country of Ephraim. And he repaired the altar of Yahweh that was in front of the vestibule of the house of Yahweh. And he gathered all Judah and Benjamin and those from Ephraim, Manasseh, and Simeon who were residing with them. For, little side note here, great numbers had deserted to him from Israel when they saw that Yahweh his God was with him. They were gathered together at Jerusalem in the third month, in the 15th year of the reign of Asa. They sacrificed to the Lord that day from the spoil that they had brought 700 oxen and 7,000 sheep. And they entered into a covenant to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, with all their heart and with all their soul. But that whoever would not seek the Lord, the God of Israel, should be put to death, whether young or old, man or woman. They swore an oath to the Lord with a loud voice and with shouting and with trumpets and with horns. And all Judah rejoiced over the oath that they had sworn with all their heart and had sought him with their whole desire. And he was found by them, and the Lord gave them rest all around. There's a lot of things to love about those readings, right? You love Asa for being so thorough, you know, that immediately after he hears that this will be a good thing, he gets busy and he finishes the job. You love the reason behind it, that he wants to drive his people toward worshiping and loving their God. You got to love the fact that the people get behind his efforts, too. We've been talking about leadership in this church for a while now. This is a great example of that. That here's Asa, and he doesn't just say, I'm going to do this, and I'm leaving everybody else behind. No, the whole nation comes together, and they work together to seek God. And I especially love the little detail there in chapter 15 and verse 9. And if you're not familiar with the Bible, this may, and with, you know, Israelite history, this may escape notice at the first read. But what's happening there is that people from the other kingdom of the Israelites, from the rival kingdom, those who have pretty much already forsaken God, there's a handful of people from that kingdom who are defecting to Asa because they see what he's doing and they see that the Lord is blessing him and they want to be part of that kingdom. What a powerful statement about all of that all of that makes about Asa and the kind of man that he is. But over all of that, all the good stuff that's in those verses right there, the thing that I love most is this little statement from chapter 15, the end of verse 17. Look at it again. The end of verse 17, the heart of Asa was wholly true all his days. Now scan up two verses and you couple that little statement with what it says about the Israelites themselves. All Judah rejoiced over the oath, for they had sworn with all their heart and had sought him with their whole desire, and he was found by them, and the Lord gave them rest all around. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful sentiment, a beautiful story, and it's so refreshing to read that in the middle of this great period of spiritual apathy and unpredictability, right? When so many things are going wrong with the nation, this is really nice to read. And so I think the lesson again here, it's not hard to find. It's not hard to see in what we've just read here. The lesson for us is that God himself must always be our top priority. Do you remember when the devil tempted Jesus and he tempted him with all the world as a blessing, as a possible thing for Jesus to have and to own. He said, I'll give you all of this if what? If you will bow down and worship me. And Jesus' response to that offer, you want to offer me anything that my heart could desire, all the world. Jesus' response to that was, be gone, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve. All the world is not a worthy replacement for the joy and the blessing of just knowing God and keeping him as the first priority in our lives. That's why it was also Jesus who said the most important commandment is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. Listen, if you love God with all your heart, there's nothing left to give to something or someone else. It belongs to him. And so even your love for other people will be the result of the fact that you love God above all else. Our love for him is priority one. All the rest of our spiritual existence comes from that. Our personal morality, the words we speak, the thoughts we entertain, the actions we take, all of that is important because we love God. All of that is important when he is number one. And in terms of what we do as a church, our church behavior, our relationships to each other, the way that we worship him, and just everything that we do as a church, all of that is important because we love God. That's why it matters. Nothing, brothers and sisters, is more important than that. Nothing is more important than that, and no priority may be higher than our love for him. And only when that's the case, only when that's the case will we find what Asa and his people found in God. They found peace. Peace that came when they chose to give God glory. Take a look again at chapter 14. Look at verse 1. After his father passed away and they buried him in the city of David, Asa, the son, reigned in his place. In his days, the land had rest for 10 years. And then go over to chapter 15. Look at verses 15 through 19 there. All Judah rejoiced over the oath, for they had sworn with all their heart and had sought him with their whole desire, and he was found by them, and the Lord gave them rest all around. And even his mother, King Asa's mother, he removed from being queen mother because she had made a detestable image for Asherah. Asa cut down her image, crushed it, and burned it at the brook Kidron. But the high places were not taken out of Israel. Nevertheless, the heart of Asa was wholly true all his days. And he brought into the house of God sacred gifts of his father and his own sacred gifts, silver and gold and vessels. And there was no more war until the 35th year of the reign of King Asa. It's a bit unusual, really, in the grand scheme of the Kings and the Chronicles. It's a bit unusual to find somebody's reign characterized by this much peace. That's one of the really nice features of the story of King Asa, is that finally, as God has promised them a land, and he's promised them for such a long time, when you go into that land, it will be a place of rest. Finally, there's somebody that does the right thing, and God gives them exactly what he said he would. And this is where the scripture reading from earlier comes into play, because this is where God fulfills so many of the promises that he has made to his people for such a long time. I'm going to read to you from Leviticus chapter 26. I'm going to start in verse 3 again, the same place that Thomas read earlier. The Lord says, you shall not make idols for yourselves or erect an image or a pillar, and you shall not set up a figured stone in your land to bow down to it, for I, the Lord, am your God. You shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. I am the Lord. If you walk in my statutes and observe my commandments and do them, then I will give to you your rains in their season, and the land shall yield its increase. And then in verse 6, he says, I will give peace in the land, and you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. And I will remove harmful beasts from the land, and the sword shall not go through your land. You shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. I will make my dwelling among you, and my soul shall not abhor you, and I will walk among you, and I will be your God, and you shall be my people. I am the Lord your God. It's actually kind of cool to take that passage and just lay it right on top of the story of Asa. And what you see is God promising, if this, then this, if this, then this. And Asa's reign is finally one of those stories where we can see the good promises of God being fulfilled in all the ways that he promised it. And so the lesson there for us is that God grants peace to those who seek him with a sincere heart. And I think this must be an appealing thing for all of us. Everybody wants to find peace in our lives. And we've talked before from this pulpit about that word sincere there. That those God gives peace to those who seek him with a sincere heart. When you read that in the scriptures, there's a connection between the word sincere and the word single. And the idea is that when your heart is sincerely devoted towards something, it is singular in its love and pursuit of that thing. And so a sincere love for God is something that consumes the whole heart. It's the only thing that that heart is for. Nothing else is allowed to get in the way of that desire. And that's what I love about the statement that Asa's whole heart was devoted to God. That he was sincere in his devotion. There's nothing else in his heart clouding his judgment and his devotion to God. Now, does that mean that he was perfect? No, it doesn't mean that. But it does mean that for this man, there was one God who had the reign over his heart. And that's it. And that's the way that we want to live as well. Now, I would love for that to be the happy ending to the story of Asa, but we still have chapter 16. So, we just don't get to do that this time. We don't get to have a happy ending because after all the good that he did, King Asa, and this is our last one for this morning, ruins everything by rejecting God's help. The language might be a little bit overstated there. I do apologize for that. But it drives an emphasis on how much is really lost by the change in his heart that you see toward the end of his life. So, let's finish reading King Asa's story. Chapter 16, verse 1. In the 36th year of the reign of Asa, the king of Israel went up against Judah and built Ramah, that he might permit no one to go out or come in to Asa, the king of Judah. Then Asa took silver and gold from the treasures of the house of the Lord and the king's house and sent them to Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, who lived in Damascus, saying, There is a covenant between me and you, as there was between my father and your father. Behold, I am sending to you silver and gold. Go break your covenant with the king of Israel, that he may withdraw from me. And that's exactly what happens in the next couple of verses. But take a look at verse 7 for God's response to that procedure. At that time, Hanani the seer came to see Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, Because you relied on the king of Syria and did not rely on the Lord your God, the army of the king of Syria has escaped you. Were not the Ethiopians and the Libyans a huge army with very many chariots and horsemen? Yet because you relied on the Lord, he gave them into your hand. For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to give strong support to those whose heart is blameless toward him. You have done foolishly in this, for from now on you will have wars. And then Asa was angry with the seer, and he put him in the stocks in prison, for he was in a rage with him because of this. And Asa inflicted cruelties upon some of the people at the same time. Now verse 11, the acts of Asa from first to last are written in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel. In the 39th year of his reign, Asa was diseased in his feet, and his disease became severe. Yet even in his disease, he did not seek the Lord, but sought help from physicians. And Asa slept with his fathers, dying in the 41st year of his reign. I'm going to tell you the problem with the way this story ends is that he turns to help from mankind instead of seeking help from God. And this is one of those things that's easy to see the problem with this from other stories in the Bible. I'll highlight just one to make the point, just to show you what I mean. You remember the story when the Israelites were going to go into the promised land, but the spies gave a bad report, and they said, "We're not able to do this under our own power. We're going to depend on the strength of men. It's just not going to work." And what happened? Well, because they had no faith in God, they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years, and that generation died before they went in. They thought they could do it themselves. But it just didn't work to try and accomplish the Lord's will without seeking the Lord's help. And so what happened to them there is what happens to Asa here, and it's what happens to us as well. When we try to do it ourselves without the Lord's help, the result is that plans fail again and again. I find it really interesting in this story, the way that the story is written, that both the times when Asa doesn't ask for help from God, he fails immediately. Now, I know that that's a very quick summation of a lot of time passing. I understand that. But I find it interesting that that's the way that it's written. And so first, he seeks peace by appealing to a powerful man instead of appealing to God. And in the last half of chapter 16, verse 9, while he sought peace, he's told, "You will have wars." And then the second episode here, he seeks healing and life from mankind and not from God. And the next thing we read about him is he died. That's the next part of the story. So both of the things that Asa tries to go to mankind for help with end up being a miserable failure. And again, I think the lesson for us is pretty obvious there, that we can't do spiritual life without God. Period. There's no point in trying to go it on our own. It's just not going to work. Asa's story serves as a reminder for us about the dangers of pride. And this is where we go back to the story that we started with this morning. The Sherpas, the people who have helped many others get to the summit of Mount Everest. As I said a little while ago, listen, it's all well and good to start off to do something great. But it's foolish to tackle something like that without seeking the help of someone who can actually get you there. And that's Asa's great mistake in the last part of his life. He wants to continue to be part of this great nation, but for a reason that remains unexplained in the text, he refuses the help of the one person who can actually get him there. He doesn't reach out to God for help to get him to the level of greatness that he hopes for. And what a waste. Especially after all the good that's been done in his lifetime with God's help. What a waste. He figures that money will solve his problems and bring peace to his nation. All it does is bring more war. And then he figures that he can just turn to the doctors and refuse to turn to God for healing and life. And he dies. I think it's obvious. I think it should be obvious to us, and yet we forget. We forget to seek God's help. When again, it should be so obvious. In a second, we're about to sing a song that says, "There is power in the blood." The song reminds us that really, we have no hope of saving ourselves in the first place. The power is in His blood, in Jesus' blood. Why would we try then to go through life without Him after that, knowing that we had no hope in the first place of saving ourselves? Again, it's foolish to try to tackle something big and daunting without the help of the one who can truly get you there. All good things then that happen in our lives come by the blessing of God's power. And so our prayer from a little while ago in the hymn, "Be with me, Lord," makes good sense. It's a great prayer for us to offer again and again that reminds us the importance of sticking with Him, seeking Him, serving Him, not depending on our own money, our own intelligence, our friends, or whoever it may be. We want to depend on the power of God, to accomplish great things in our spiritual walk with Him. And so, do you want to walk with God? Well, I know that you do. Then depend on Him to give you the strength to make that happen. And the good news of the Bible is, He will give that to you every time you ask. So that leaves me with one question from the story of King Asa. What are we to make of the assessment that God said King Asa's whole heart was true all of his days? If the end of his life looks so bad and looks so bleak and he walks away from God, what do we make of that? What do we make of that statement? Well, number one, I think the writer of Chronicles is using that phrase a little differently than we might use it. I think he means to say that Asa didn't worship any other gods, that he didn't have any idols allowed in his kingdom. He only worshiped Yahweh God. It doesn't necessarily mean that he had a perfectly righteous heart, but that his heart only belonged to one God. But can I just ask you to think about that phrase and think about how much better our lives would be if we took that phrase and made that our goal in every way. That in every aspect of my life, my heart is wholly devoted to Yahweh God. That's my prayer for each one of us. That same thing could be said about each of us. And that brings us to make the invitation for this morning, which is that if you want to have a pure heart that is wholly devoted to God, then you need to let Him wash your heart clean of sin and fill it with His Spirit. That's what we want from God. That's the way that we want to have an entire heart completely, sincerely, singularly devoted to Him. And the way that He has promised to do that is through baptism in water. And so if you want to know more about that, or if you're ready to commit to that today, then we want to give you an opportunity to talk to me or to one of the shepherds of this congregation about how that works and how we can make that happen for you. If you want to do that in a public way, you can come talk to us while we're all standing and singing this hymn together.